Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Here to keep you company. What's that? My favorite, actually, hour. It's me and DJ Khaled. Another one. And we're eight minutes into the hour of four. And as usual, Monday to Friday, you know, we're here and we're here from 4 to 6. Just bringing you one exciting topic after another. And today we come bearing, I don't want to say good news because I don't want to lie, more like confusing news, which will take us back to the beginning of the year during the 39th ordinary session of the African Union. We all know, you know, events like that do cover a whole different, all kinds of topics. But today we just decided to pick one, just one for today. Dwight.
Welcome, guys, and good afternoon as once again. Obviously, as you do know, that we are now in the sort of like new home run where we will, you know, you'll be in our company, or we'll be basically providing you with insight once again. We hope to stop with the theatrics, like yesterday's theatrics, because obviously, you know, we're not actors, so we're not playing roles. But when we provide insight and discussions on the things we realize when we research for our show every day is that we sometimes sit there wondering what's going on here. But don't worry, this is the AU, you know, they are friendly targets, so friendly shots can be fired.
Yeah.
Until they find out that we do this.
The friendly shots are going to be fired, you
know? Nonetheless, you know, regardless.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, welcome once again. Good afternoon to the listeners out there. And we are obviously doing our thing in terms of once again looking at a AU-based discussion.
Yeah.
And this time about the, I think this is more about the steamrolling, not the steamrolling. Steamrolling is a different expression. About the ramping up the implementation of the AFCFTA.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Helmut, you know, it's wonderful to write language about we accept, we adopt, we recognize, we remember, we pull back from the archives and the files when none of us were born scenarios to supplement it just, you know, within a document, this document that we sit with, the declarations, decisions and resolutions document from the AU Heads of State Summit, just so that you guys know, this document technically serves as an actual report that actually explains to you what was explained. And when they give you a little bit of an indication of what a source document from that speaks of, then you go try and find out what it is. And we've cited the AFCFTA 2 months back, right? In May.
We have, I think, like, is it once or twice now?
But not the one after World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
The one that we had, the discussion we had just like now, past May, mm-hmm. this May month.
Yeah.
Because we also spoke there about a scenario of, it was an AFCFTA related discussion from the same document as well, but not from the same segment of the document.
Yeah.
And the AFCFTA, if you have to ask me right now, like from a SADC perspective, you know, what's the status of the AFCFTA discussion? If you're going to look for like promotional, monitoring, you know, activity that continuously puts a spotlight on at where are we with trading with the rest of Africa? Well, you just have to look to the president's particular visit that's currently happening right now in South Africa to see specifically how Namibia values, you know, the closest Southern African community that Namibia is involved in. And then if you try to look past the DRC, in terms of where the SADC realm ends, you will primarily see that in Namibia's context, we don't hear that much about what is Namibia's efforts in terms of trying like to say, you know, let's connect the airspaces between Namibia and the rest of Africa. Let's try and find, you know, extensive sort of like discussions of connecting the bridges, connecting the roads, connecting the railways, connecting, you know, all communication and transport infrastructure so that Africans can move throughout. However, an interesting development actually happened this morning, Helmut, from a SADC perspective on the people crossing the border. SADC has, that's why I love the SADC development so much. SADC itself, AFCFTA wants to achieve a continental thing, ne?
Yeah.
And then SADC goes and ramps up its own sort of like internalized project, ne? That is cut and paste exactly the same like the AFCFTA discussion. Cut and paste exactly the same like the AFCFTA discussion. Okay, I also believe we should probably bring in Rwanda into SADC. But I know that Tshisekedi probably won't like that suggestion. Maybe Uganda as well, but Uganda is more eastern and central than, you know, Rwanda. But yeah, it's just a suggestion, just out there. I know the Minister of International Relations, she's also there in Pretoria with the president. So it's just a suggestion, you know. But I actually believe, you know, because Rwanda is technically stable.
Yeah.
DRC is technically, inverted commas, stable-ish. But yeah, I'll leave it there for now, Hamoud.
You know, when it comes to, you know, I recently learned that, I'm putting in effort to educate myself on how, you know, on how the African Union operates.
Yeah.
Because we know that, you know, when you look at it from a United Nations level, you know that you have a United Nations as a whole body, and it's divided in like two main branches. You have the UN Security Council and you have the General Assembly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they have the International Court of Justice, which is their legal arm. Now, the thing is, the legislations, on which the ICJ, operates on, it specifically states that, only states, their primary interest is in countries, not individuals.
Mm.
Yeah. So, which is why, you know, we saw the creation of the ICC, in 1999, 2000, because they were trying to, because the idea was, it's either expand the ICJ statute to expand, you know, to include the prosecution or the bringing of grievances by individual organizations or individuals, and also prosecution of individuals, or we have to create an entire legal body that will handle with the prosecution of individuals, and then the ICJ just sticks to mediating or more like resolving disputes in between countries. So then they decided, you know what, we'll just have to create an entire legal arm which does not have a direct link to the UN as you have the ICJ. Now, bring it to the African Union. One thing I've come to learn is that when it comes to the discussion of safety and security, you have the the PSC. The Security Council, the P, still trying to figure that out.
The permanent something.
Yeah. Now, the
permanent secretary. No, permanent. It not secretary. It stands for another name. But yeah, you were saying it.
Yeah. Look, the thing is, when it comes to reporting of the security discussions, what you see, what you find is that. You have under the PSC, you have Council of the Wise. Now, Council of the Wise are the one that, you know, just this is a panel of, I'm assuming, the wise of the wisest on the African continent, of which I think from 2017 to 2021, former President Pohamba was on the Council of the Wise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now,
that's
look, Africa.
Sounds like a Marvel.
I know, right?
Sounds like a comic book situation. But okay, yeah, Council of the Wise, yeah.
Look, that's what I kept laughing. I kept laughing. I was like, of all names these guys could come up with, Council of the Wise?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... then I also, realized that it's because, through this Council of the Wise, the PSC and African Union, sort of like, because the whole silencing of the guns by 2021 fell on its face, they had to extend that whole silencing of the guns to 2030. And which is like, it makes a lot of sense because the guns are not silenced yet. Now, but when you look at in terms of coming together as a continent, It's like, you know, we are doing both, you know, coming together and splitting all at the same time, both politically and economically. Because now, if you look at the situation in in South Africa right now, it brings a whole different angle to the discussion of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area.
Mm.
But also at the same time, you have because you have all this anti-immigration, sentiment going on in South Africa. But at the same time, you have countries like among other countries that have done the open border policy in relation to inter-Africa travel. You have a lot of African countries, including Namibia, Botswana, but especially Rwanda has been at the forefront, and Kenya joined the chat, Chad. The president of Chad announced, I think that was a day or two ago, that from next year you can, ladies and gentlemen, just travel to Chad. Visa no problemo. Now
Chad.
How many people can find Chad on the map? But look, the thing is, Africa Continental Free Trade Area.
Personally, for me, now.
Yeah.
An African Muslim country, nah, has got bigger governance issues than a African Christian majority country. Do you know why I say that? Well, we can obviously look specifically to was Mali, nah. If people don't know, if people don't know specifically about looking at, that is a French, Chad is also French speaking, but the concerns obviously have been that Chad, Central African Republic, Niger, and Mali are the guys through which much of the terrorism activities flow. So we've got to ask a question in terms of, if you're as a Namibian contemplating about going to Chad, you really have to ask a deep question in your soul, your little heart, and your little soul. Should you firstly, say goodbye to all your earthly possessions, your family and your loved ones? Or, are you going to be one of the brave and actually prove how brave Namibians are by taking a flight there?
To Chad.
I don't know why I keep confusing you in France. Look, if it was still the president of Ghana saying, all Africans can fly visa-free to Ghana, I would have been there tomorrow. I know I'd be there for tomorrow. I know you'd also be there tomorrow. Specifically to Ghana.
Mm-hmm. Believe me, I'll be there.
You can't deny.
Uh-huh.
There's just a specific mineral there in Ghana.
Gabia type tourism.
What?
Nothing.
What did you say? Gambia type. You see, I made a promise at the start of the show. We'll avoid the theatrics. We literally started with the theatrics. But I don't know so much about Chad.
There have been a lot of content all over social media, especially TikTok, coming from a lot of Africans, where we are trying to sort of especially content creators, just in a very goofy way, trying to learn about African countries. Some are just creating content of has anyone checked on Madagascar? What even is going on in Madagascar? It was started by one guy. At least the first video on that I came across on social media was started by a guy who kept asking, first of all, where's Gambia and what's going on in Gambia?
How could he ask that question?
Gambia is
Africa's narrowest country. Do you know that?
Yeah, I know, right?
You can ride on a bike. You can literally walk from one side of the country.
Seriously?
This is not a joke, guys. You can literally, if you stand on the beach there, you're standing on the one border with Gambia and Sierra Leone.
Hang on a second. Gambia?
Yeah. And then you can walk to the other side, then you'll be on the border of Gambia and I think Mauritania on the other side.
The Gambia.
Oh, is it Senegal? No. Yeah, it's Senegal on the other side. Yeah.
This one that's my favorite, that looks like it was sandwiched in between. Actually, it is just sandwiched in Senegal. Yeah, it's the one.
Gambia. So it's Senegal on both sides.
Yeah, it's Senegal on both sides.
Yeah.
Just sandwiched in there.
So you can walk from one side of the country to the other side of the country in there. Not in one day. It'll be in one day, but it'll literally be in the same hour. That you can walk from one side of Gambia to the other side of... I'm sorry, if you're from Gambia, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
And
but that's a reality. It's a fact on the map. That's how wide you guys are.
And the thing about the whole country of Gambia is that it was just put together to follow a river.
Mm.
Yeah, which is a very interesting thing. And I imagine they have some interesting agricultural activities going on there. But what we are seeing is you have instabilities going on in the Sahel, in the Sahel region. Basically, it's been going on for a while, but
yeah.
It just seems to escalate. You have northern Nigeria. You have some terrorist activities going on, in northern Nigeria. And when you come to the Horn of Africa, you have the whole, Ethiopia and the Eritrea, Tigray region going on, and the recognition of Somaliland. And on Central Africa here, you have Central and South and part of Africa.
Yeah.
You have the M23, type of activities. On the side of Mozambique, you have something similar to that, but... Then while we are sort of like trying to navigate the challenges of how to solve all those problems, because you have to understand that we need the utmost degree of peace and security in order to build, to invest millions of dollars into energy and basically a road and energy type of infrastructure for the trade to take place.
Mm.
Yeah, that's one of the things that was pointed out during the energy security summit of the future in Glasgow, I believe. Was that in London by the International Energy Agency back in 2023 or 2024? That one thing to understand is that energy infrastructure, costs a lot of money. So if you want to get any invest, unless you have your own money, you can just invest in your own infrastructure. But when you look at it on an African Union level, from a financing standpoint, we have a lot of gaps.
Yeah.
So which means investment is going to be one of those avenues, like especially foreign investment. It's one of those avenues that we're going to need to pour a lot of money into our energy and transport infrastructure, which will make the energy will make the manufacturing easy, and the infrastructure will make the trading in terms of logistics easy.
Yeah.
Now, unless you have your own money, which we don't as a continent, so that means foreign direct investment is one of those revenues of financing that we need to invest in our energy. And into our energy and the transport infrastructure. So for this to take place, for someone to come into your country and pour millions of dollars into your green energy or fossil fuel type or whatever form of energy, which are ridiculously expensive, you have to provide some degree of assurance that that country is not going to go up in flames the next year before they can get their investment back.
Yeah.
So that alone is creating a lot of, let me just say, it's making the African Continental Free Trade Area discussion a very interesting one, because you have a whole anti-immigration going on in South Africa, which has gotten to the point of where it has... basically, it reached a level of diplomatic tension in between a lot of African countries and South Africa, including Malawi, Nigeria, Ghana. Yeah, especially Malawi, Nigeria, and Ghana. So all these things are, it's one of those things that have to be, discussed. How do we navigate? Because whether we like it or not, these challenges are going to come.
Mm.
And this is not something that's just unique to Africa. And I've used this example like 1,000 times. In 2016, the British were complaining about, pardon me, the British were complaining about Polish immigrants.
Not just Polish. They were complaining about the British. The whole Brexit thing was primarily based upon Syrian and Afghan refugees.
And you know what's my favorite part now that you brought up the whole Brexit thing? Which is why I like to say that...
That's why I expanded the Polish immigrants.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
The Polish immigrants were part of the EU discussion.
Yeah.
But because the EU and the EU, that the core EU countries were already absorbing Syrian and Afghan refugees because of those wars.
Yeah. Which they caused.
And then, well, the British caused it.
Yeah.
They just followed, which is partially that they participated in the causing.
Mm-hmm.
But when the Germans and the French started telling the British, okay, now when are you going to take your portion of these refugees, of this these wars that you caused, mm-hmm. that you and the Americans caused? Then the British started be saying, but no, why must we take orders from you, from Brussels? And that's where the discussion. Now, then the whole Brexit discussion started looking at reviewing the relationship. Reviewing the relationship means reviewing the legally binding things. Now, there's just one thing that's ongoing.
Yeah.
Still ongoing.
Okay.
The review between the European Court of Justice. The European Court of Justice has impact on British courts. Meaning?
Oh, yeah.
If you don't like something that a British court ruled against you, civilian or criminal, you can escalate it to the European Court of Justice. And the European Court of Justice has overturned British
cases
in British from British courts.
They didn't think this whole Brexit thing through, did they?
No, they didn't. Because they were trying to make this on the economics of the situation without realizing that it impacts people. But before that, let's take the ad break.
Get so much more.
You get so much more with the ShopRite price. Because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 2 kg Real Good Frozen Mixed Chicken Portions. Only 104 Namibian dollars 99. 5 kg Nice Rice Parboiled White Rice for 89 Namibian dollars 99. And 1 liter Clover Long Life Full Cream Milk or Low Fat Milk for a low 22 Namibian dollars 99 each. Deals valid until 19 July 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Welcome back. So, back to you before I start. Deviating from the subject.
So the Polish
immigrants
immigration discussion, né, was because if you're a European country part of the EU process or the EU project, but you're not a full EU member, but you're part of it. That's just what England or the United Kingdom is. That's what Norway is. That's what Sweden and Finland are. They are EU members, but the reason why I put the UK alongside the Scandinavian countries is primarily because they had the same relationship. You maintain your, or the same identifying features. You maintain your national currency. So the Norwegian, the Finnish, and the Swedish economies still have their own currencies. So do the UK with the British pound sterling.
Yeah.
And if you are a formal, fully accepted EU member, you have the EU, the euro as your currency, and the European Central Bank based in, where's that, in Berlin? Or where's that bank based? But with the European Central Bank, obviously driving monetary policy for you from there. But the UK, they wanted some of the trade benefits without the financial implications, for example, like losing the identity of your own currency or substituting it for the EU. So that particular discussion is that they thought, Helmut, if you go look at that Brexit discussion, whole Brexit campaign,
mm-hmm.
is a propaganda campaign. Dude, from since last year, propaganda and the power of propaganda have fascinated me for like the better part of almost 7 months. And I've been looking more and more into like misleading propaganda, misleading political campaigns that are propaganda, basically. usually propaganda is about country to country, you know?
Yeah.
A country or, you know, a communication medium or whatever, like just saying this is the official narrative versus what the facts on the ground say.
Yeah.
But if you go to countries like the US and the UK and South Africa, you'll find similarities there. And even Australia. You'll find even the corporate companies, major companies, also committing propaganda. Now, since COVID, we started hearing about misleading misinformation and disinformation, right?
Yeah.
But that is propaganda 101. Propaganda 101, yeah, is basically to either say something else that deviates you from the fact, that misleads you, or you give information that technically doesn't match with the facts on the ground or the realities on the ground. So, the Brexit campaign obviously began. They had their stuff. They were talking about their health system making back £300 million a year that supposedly the
British... someone thought they did the math right.
Yeah, they thought they were mathing properly.
Except
the reality is not the same. They were getting a lot of subsidy payments. If you're part of the EU, ne? It's like what our Ministry of Urban and Rural Development does for the local authorities, ne?
Yeah.
You can technically tell the Ministry of Urban and Rural Development, listen, I want to be ambitious. If you're a town council or a municipal council or a village council, you can tell the minister, I want to be ambitious. Can you write me this check? Because these are the projects that we want to initiate for our financial year. And then, like what Minister Sankwasa obviously said earlier this year, you know, there are various alternative avenues to seeking financing.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. You obviously have to collect the money back.
Yeah.
So you have to keep a cycle of this money flowing.
Yeah.
Now, they thought it was purely just about the money. And it was purely just about Syrian and Afghan refugees. It later on cascaded, if you want to literally divorce from the EU, né? They lost farm workers, Helmut. That talk we had here on Monday with Mr. Branch, was it Monday or Tuesday? No, Tuesday.
Yeah.
No, it was Tuesday. That talk we had here after the president came back from China,
yeah,
here on Tuesday, né? With Mr. Branch. He obviously cited there's certain things you can do, certain things you couldn't do, things that you have to look into, things that are benefits, certain things that you probably as Namibia would have to build up to. But there are obvious certain immediate positives and there are sort of like things you have to work towards.
Yeah.
The immediate impacts, meaning the immediate negatives that the British lost because of Brexit.
Yeah.
They lost a flexible workforce, not just for the agriculture, for the tourism. They discovered that the British don't want to work. They don't want to work. For the whole of 2021, 2022, ne, Boris Johnson was basically telling his people, his Brits, mm-hmm, yeah, so why don't you guys do the dustbin collection jobs and the janitorial jobs? Helmut, yeah, they have so many vacancies, ne?
Yeah.
They have so many vacancies. Then they have so many unemployed youth. And then we think we're sitting in Namibia with our issues now. Then we think we've got real problems. The thing is that we don't have the vacancies and the jobs, but we have the unemployed youth. They have the vacancies and the jobs, but they have people that don't want to do the jobs. They don't. How much? Imagine if you were paid at least £500 a week. Look, I'm not saying go and become a waiter, a bartender. You know, you've studied your 5-year degree here to achieve honors just to become a bartender there in London,
mm-hmm,
just because on your passport says you come from Africa.
I can only imagine how much their taxes are, because I know those countries.
No, but that's why they made things also so easy for people to earn money.
Mm-hmm.
So now you sit there earning £500 a week, ne? You get paid £500 a week, how much?
Yeah.
£500 times 20 is what? 10,000? 10,000? You get every week £500?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just making up numbers.
Yeah.
That's all. Just so that you know.
That was the average.
Well, because the numbers, when I wanted to go do study in, you know, when I wanted to, because I was this close to applying for the program, when I wanted to do the holiday work in the UK thing, that was here between 2000 to 2010. Mm-hmm. When I wanted to do the program, I heard about the guys when they went there. So it's, it was, you know, a bunch of these guys from Windhoek and from Otjiwarongo and from the coast and from Rehoboth. I heard the guys were making like £400 a week. They get paid their wages, but they're working like the jobs that you would find here, like being a waiter at a restaurant here or working for a fast food thing, you know. They would be paid similar kinds of wages. But at that stage, the exchange rate between Namibia and the UK was literally 2-10. £1 was 10 Namibian dollars. Today, it was obviously close to 20 Namibian dollars.
Yeah.
So back then, if they were paid £400 every week in wages, they earned 4,000 Namibian dollars every week. How much? You will not earn 4,000 Namibian dollars every week being a bartender, being a waiter in Namibia. There is no way that even that owner of that restaurant will pay you that money.
Well, first of all, if they did that, they would run out of business.
No, they wouldn't run out of the business. Everybody would have wanted to work for them because you can easily achieve your economic, your personal goals with that kind of money.
No, I'm looking at the sustainability of the business, like, because that money has to come from somewhere.
No, yes, most from the customer, most.
Yeah. Just the
you're getting most your commission, your tips, and your stuff.
Okay, how big is that business, though?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And how many people are there that will come and eat every day for you to make that money?
That's why it becomes a problem.
Exactly. Yeah. So, it's either you are on that negative perception that you were now exploring,
yeah,
about, you know, my business won't float very long.
I mean, look, or, if you float very long, I mean, it's just a matter of time before the authorities start looking at
what happened here.
Something is going on.
Yeah. Or, or there's a whole bunch of overweight Namibians that are just too happy to spend so much money with you.
Well, we're also getting there pretty quickly as Namibians. But yeah, let me not explore
my first suspicion, or more like the authorities' first suspicion would be how many... Okay.
Let's audit your plate.
Yeah, let's audit your plate because...
let's audit your plate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, if you can keep it running for a year and you are happy and the meth is not mething,
yeah,
that will have all kinds of signs of money laundering.
True. If it's still floating.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's still floating.
Unless you can prove how you're making the money back, like with regards to how many people are coming in and how much you are making and how you obviously will have to use your income to justify the expenditure.
Yeah. So,
now, before you continue with your, I would like to point something out.
Yeah.
Okay. On these decisions, declarations, and resolutions, from the African Union, there are a few things that I point, you know, that I found on this on the implementation of plans, African Union implementation plans of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area.
Mm.
Because I mean, that's why I started off with what's going on, more like basically everything anti Africa Continental Free Trade Area going on in, you know, in the Horn of Africa, Central Africa, you know, West Africa, North and South. These are challenges, whether we like it or not, these are challenges, and the challenges will always be there.
Mm.
You can't get rid of them. It's all about finding, things like what's taking place in South Africa, like the anti-immigration now. Those are challenges that basically just need slight navigation and the conflict resolution on a national level. But what's going on in much of the Sahel region and Central Africa with the M23, now that's something that's dire that basically needs urgent attention in terms of settling, because those are serious challenges that you basically have to navigate in terms of resolving if you want to implement the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. So what that brings us to is this was at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
The African Union came together and they looked at a number of things. One of them was protectionism.
Yeah, I was looking at that now, that paragraph 7.
Yeah. One was protectionism. And, protectionism is something that I believe started popping up in the early days of the COVID-19, when you saw a lot of countries like India, you know, just saving their wheat for their local population. Or was the Egypt, I think, did the same thing with chicken. Like, you know, they will prioritize, internal trades, because you have to feed your people and sell all at the, do business all at the same time.
Yeah.
And this is something that, Branch pointed out, that, take for example, if the COVID-19 lockdown extended longer than it did, are we sure we would not have seen South Africa, implement the same measures?
Well, here's the funny thing. Remember at the start when we started, I mentioned to you that it seems like South Africa, not South Africa, SADC, is trying to ramp up the what's the thing's name? Let me get the proper name, because this has to do with literally the movement of people across borders discussion that we've seen in the AFC FTA scenario. Is ultimately impacting the developments from the member states of AU trying to achieve the same goals. Now, a little bit earlier, and I just saw this primarily coming through from the SADC dimension. So Malawi recently signed the SADC protocol on the facilitation of movement of persons.
Yeah.
Now, this feeds into SADC's own economic integration.
Yeah.
And the economic integration obviously includes infrastructure and obviously includes systems and people and the movement of people.
Yeah.
The concern from that protectionism thing is what you now obviously now are highlighting, what March and March Hutus are committing there in South Africa. Because complaining about other Africans in your country is a protectionist measure.
Yeah.
Now, Africans don't want to hear specifically, like in these kinds of discussions of policy analysis, of political rhetoric and political will and governmental policies across the continent. Africans don't want to be called racist, Helmut. I'll tell you today, brah. Africans don't want to be called racist. In fact, if you want to make a fellow African angry, just try and listen, for example, to the political messaging that they're exposed to, that they support, and then analyze it versus what the rest of the world calls each other in terms of labels, and you'll realize that African politics is very close to, for example, this March and March is very close to the failed Austrian painter and Mussolini.
Yeah.
It's very close to the failed Austrian painter and Mussolini. They're talking about sort of like protecting a kind of way of life for local, and I'll use this term just for now, just for academic persons, for local black South Africans. But why don't they act that way against Americans and Russians and Germans and so on that are living there in South Africa? They're living in the nice parts of the town, by the way.
That's what, that right there is what makes this whole thing basically, well, ridiculous. Because, if you are going to come up with a condition, you have to apply it all the way through if you want people to believe that that's really your concern.
Yeah.
Except in this case, it's not the case. I mean, we don't see that happening because, everything that's being said about, when they say immigrant, it's like
they talking about?
Yeah, it's like the term immigrant in this case has been reduced to everyone who is black.
And everyone who's African.
If you are African.
Because they don't even complain about, let's for example say, and mind you, Helmut, South Africa's, remember South Africa's also on some sort of a terror watch list. Because there have been instances where there were South Africans from South Africa's Muslim community who were discovered and exposed to have some sort of linkages, whether it was Al Qaeda and whether it was the subsequent Islamic State, IS.
Yeah.
Mm. After, you know, the two chapters, after Afghanistan began and after Saddam Hussein fell from Iraq, there have been scenarios. Now, you don't see much and much Khutarse complain about the potential threat of terror in their scenario. Then there was also, remember back in 2024, the U.S. ambassador that made the false alarm about the impending terror threat in Johannesburg, or where was it? But he couldn't mention the exact location. And when he was asked, now show us the location of where you think this attack will happen.
So it was just fear-mongering.
Yeah. And this was, and that ambassador
now,
was...
You know, that's actually something that I found very...
suspicious.
Suspicious about, not, you know, not just suspicious, but very interesting.
Yeah.
On, you know, in terms of looking at geopolitics.
Yeah.
Because, look, that coming from a regular citizen is one thing, but that coming from an ambassador...
Yeah.
I mean, I... Just couldn't help but go.
And he was grilled. They had, I watched ENGA at the time.
Yeah.
He was grilled by the South African media. They were asking him, where's it happening? How's it happening? But before we continue, guys, we'll quickly switch over for the Lifeline, Childline, Eagle FM discussion. And one of the guests has obviously made their time. We'll see each other again shortly after this.
Eagle
FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva tere wikoni mando tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewetike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doini nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamoiri nawa. Ninge kwata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights.
Welcome back. We are 9 minutes left to the hour of five, just a little bit of a pause in a home run, and we are going to take just a couple of minutes to look at our usual Friday segment of Uitani Childline radio program in collaboration with Lifeline Childline. And today, Kachana Siseho is back. And today she's the one that will be educating us on she's the one that will be educating us on healthy living and good nutrition. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And welcome to Eagle FM.
Thank you.
All right. I hope you are, you have your information ready to educate us on healthy living and good nutrition.
Yes,
please take it away.
I'm ready.
My name is Kachena Siseho, and you're locked into Eagle FM in partnership with Uitani Childline Radio, where we talk about what you talk about. Today, we are talking about something close to our stomachs. We are diving into healthy living and good nutrition, especially for the kids growing up today. And parents, you would really want to listen to this one, because getting the kiddies to eat healthy can feel like a full-time boxing match. But nutrition isn't about eating boring food. It's about giving our bodies the right fuel to run smoothly. Think of your body like a fancy car. If you put bad, dirty fuel in it, it's going to break down. Good nutrition means balancing our plates with traditional real foods like mahangu, fresh vegetables, lean meats, and fruits instead of relying on processed stuff. Speaking of fuel, let's look at some of the bad habits we see every day. The biggest culprit, sugar. Kids drinking way too many fizzy drinks and eating sweets right before dinner, it gives them a massive sugar rush and they crash and then become super grumpy. And the dreaded sugar crash, another bad habit, is skipping breakfast. Kids need that morning energy for school. And let's not forget the screen time. Sitting on a phone or watching TV all day instead of going outside to play in the sunshine, healthy living means moving your body. So, How do we make it fun for the kids? Time for some facts you can share with the little ones tonight. Did you know carrots were originally purple, not orange? Yes. And here is another one. Apples give you reliable, steady energy in the morning than a cup of coffee because of their natural sugar and fiber. So skip the sweet energy drinks and pack an apple in the school lunchbox. Another great trick for parents is eating the rainbow. Don't just serve plain white rice and meat. Try to get as many colors on the plate. Green spinach, yellow butternut, red tomatoes. The more the colors, the more the vitamins they eat. And make water the default drink. If they want something sweet, drop a slice of lemon or orange into their water bottle. If it tastes great without all the hidden sugars. Small changes lead to big results. Let's keep our Namibian kids strong, active, and healthy. We're going to just step away for a quick commercial break, but don't leave just yet. More great stuff coming your way.
You heard it. After the break, we'll continue on more shocking information in relation to food, like carrots being purple. Had no idea. And on the other side of the break, more carrot purple stories on the other side from Akachana Seho with the Uitani Childline radio program with in collaboration with Childline Lifeline. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
And welcome back. We continue with the Uitani Childline radio program in collaboration with Lifeline Childline, with Kachane Seho educating us on healthy living and good nutrition. So we proceed from the healthy, we proceed from the, I'm never letting that go. the, you know, the carrots and sugar. I do eat a lot of sugar. I mean, just, I like to buy an entire box. I pride myself as a cool uncle. It turns out I'm not a cool, you know, as cool as I thought, but, I'll just, pass the floor back to Kachana to keep to educate us more on the subject she has for us today.
If you're just joining us, welcome to the party. Today, today I'll be talking about healthy living and good nutrition and how to make eating well actually fun for the kids and yourself too. Before the break, we were talking about eating the rainbow and swapping out those sugary fizzy drinks for some refreshing fruit-infused water. Now, I have a quick question. If you could have any superpower, what would you guys choose? I'm pretty sure most of you guys chose super speed, but actually, if you did choose super speed, I have some good news for you. What if I told you that our local Namibian superfood, Mahangu, is actually a real-life speed potion? It's all about, I know it sounds crazy, but it's all about the energy. Some foods like white bread or sugary sweets give you super fast burst of energy, but then you crash and feel totally tired after 5 minutes. But Mahangu is different. It releases its energy nice and slowly. So basically the battery lasts all day. It's like a slow burning fuel that keeps kids running, jumping and paying attention in class without running out of gas. It is literal brain power. So instead of just calling it porridge, parents can tell the kids they're eating superhero fuel to get ready for school. It's all about making it sound cool. Healthy eating doesn't have to be a battle, parents. It just takes a bit of creativity, some fun facts, and involving the kids in the kitchen. And while we're fueling our bodies with all this awesome food, we also need to keep those engines moving, because good fuel is only half the fun. But when people hear the words working out, they usually think of grown-ups lifting giant heavy weights at the gym. But working out doesn't have to be boring, and it definitely isn't just for fitness pros. It's for all of us, teens, parents, and older folks too. Anything that gets you moving, gets your heart beating fast, and makes you sweat a little bit is a great workout. But why is moving our bodies so important for the grown-ups too? Well, here's a cool fact. Moving your body actually washes away stress. When we move our bodies, our brains release happy chemicals. It is like a natural mood booster. So if you had a stressful day at work, school, a quick 15-minute walk or a fast dance session can completely clear your mind. Like, it's basically a free mood booster. I think we all need some of that. Plus, it keeps our hearts, muscles, and bones strong as we get older. It keeps you feeling young and gives you the energy to get through busy days. But look, let's be totally honest for a second. We are talking about all these amazing healthy foods, but sometimes you walk into the shop and that bag of salty crunchy chips is just sitting on the shelf, literally looking right at you. And we want to make one thing super clear. Eating healthy foods does not mean you can never have those treats again. It's not about being perfect. It's all about balance. Think of it like this. If you eat good, healthy foods most of the time, it's totally okay to have those chips or sweet treats once in a while. We call it sometimes food. Don't let the sometimes food become your everyday food. Fuel your body with the good stuff first, and then a little treat here and there is no problem at all. Hopefully you picked up some good tips today, but that's it from me, your host, Kachana. Massive shout out to everyone locking in with us today. We also want to extend a huge thank you to Lifeline Childline and UNICEF Namibia and European Union for making this program possible. You are locked into Eagle FM in partnership with Uitani Childline Radio, where we talk about what you talk about. And remember, if you ever need someone to talk to, call the toll-free numbers 116 or 106. That's it from me, and we will catch you right here on the next bean. Bye.
So I can eat it, but not all the time.
Yeah, you can eat it, but just not all the time.
But it's very easy to make. When I come from work, it's just throw it in the microwave, problem solved.
But just don't make it your every time food. It can be like your sometimes food. Maybe like once in a week you eat that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, not every day.
So the problem is every day. It's not the food. So the eater is the problem, not the food.
It's both. Oh, okay. It's both. Ooh, yeah.
Thank God. All right. That was Kachana Siseho with Witani Childline radio program in collabo with Lifeline Childline. And today's subject was on healthy living and good nutrition here on Eagle FM. Catch you on the next segment of Witani Childline radio program. So we're going to take a quick break while we, you know, we escort and give a very awesome thanks to Kachana for educating us today. And when we come back on the other side of the break, and Kachana, once again, welcome to Eagle FM.
And thank you.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge kwa tafanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora etatu imwe bali heali, nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa, nora etatu natu, bali o etatu batatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM, lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom.
And welcome back. We continue with Homran. And look, it's... It turns out it's not easy to trade with each other. At least, I know the one thing that I totally at least get is that we are still in on a rudimentary level of the whole establishing, trade routes and trade relations and all types. You know, this is basically Africa laying the foundation of what our, you know, children and grandchildren will just look back at and, in the very same way that we see modern day trading blocks, especially the European Union. It was laid down a long time ago by people like, just like you and me, except, white and in snow. We are, brown and in sand, very suited to our respective environments. But, other than that, the challenges like what we are seeing in South African relations to the to diplomatic and economic relations is not something that's going to disappear. Just like the saying goes, every family has one troublemaker that is going to make sure that the family is either angered or well entertained, one of the two. So. One thing that the African Union pointed out in their 39th ordinary session that was took place in February, I think it was organized by a single person because it started started on the 14th of February. So they did point out now the following thing. Now the whole document is a decision document because this passage is categorized as a decision because the document has like three main divisions of how, in which the information is split. You have decisions, declarations, and what's that third one? Decisions and declarations and that other thing. So on the decision of the implementation of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, Oh boy. Now let's look at how good we are as a continent when it comes to English.
What to English?
Using, you know, the language of the African Union itself in terms of expressing deep concern.
Uh-huh.
At, you know, at the profound weakening and undermining of multilateralism and its principles. Further, and we further express support for a rules-based multilateral trading system with the World Trade Organization at its core, and furthermore express concern about the imposition of unilateral restrictive trade measures that negatively affect the members of African Union and objectives of the agreement of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. I know that on this one, the shots were being fired at Donald Trump's tariffs.
Mm.
Yeah,
because I tried looking up at the World Trade. Okay. Is there any issue that the WTO has with the AFCFTA's principle and what it tries to achieve? And the WTO is just like, you know, like a background support singer, you know, saying, yeah, you can do it.
You got this.
You can do this, Africa. You can do this. Be yourself. And you sit there thinking, okay, so who is the actual issue? And then later on, you sit there thinking without them identifying the actual issue. Aha, it's Liberty Day of last year. Remember, then yeah. April, 2 April. Was decided
to distribute tariffs.
You know, as if it was Christmas in the middle of the year. No one asked for it, but we all got it. So yeah, it is Donald Trump.
Okay, this is one of those things that will keep bringing us to the discussion of, apart from we expressly condemn, what practical methods in terms of contingency planning do we have in place in the event of situations like the one, you know, like Donald Trump's tariffs or the war in the Middle East?
Mm.
What contingency plans do we have? Because we are going to have, we are going to need some if we don't have ready.
Yeah.
Because expressing concerns and condemning, that's not going to cut it when you are caught in an economic storm.
Well, Hamoud, it's a good thing you're asking that question about economic storms and the likes. Right now, as we are sitting here, Donald Trump is busy accusing China of committing something. As if the Americans don't spy on everybody. He's now blaming. Remember, between 2020 uh-huh. and 2024, uh-huh. it was supposedly the Russians and Putin.
Yeah.
Interfering with communication, propaganda on social media and stuff like that
yeah.
regarding the elections and the politics of the US. Now, the Americans are now blaming, through their head of state, China, after he visited Xi Jinping, start of this year.
You know, the whole election interference thing.
Yeah.
you know what that is?
Okay.
That is that's noise making. That's the only word I can think of. That's geopolitical noise making. But one thing I know,
for locals, for the Americans,
exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's geopolitical noise making, and a lot of Americans, not the ones that are on the in your much of mainstream media.
Mm.
You are looking for unfortunately, I have to now to reference content creators, because this is where mainstream media have fell on their face.
Yeah,
because their line of questioning is not one that is tailored towards. There's one Iranian professor who asked an Australian journalist, I think it was a week or two ago. It was just before he answered his question. The point he was, he was asked. The question she asked was, "What right does Iran have to hold the world hostage?" Something like that. And I'm paraphrasing here in relation to the Strait of Hormuz.
Mm.
And now the professor's response was, "You're not much of a journalist, are you?" Now, why is he responding like that?
Mm.
It's because if she really was, she's smart.
No, but what question did she ask for him to respond like that?
What right does Iran have to hold the world hostage? by blocking or it, with all the activities taking place in the, you know, in the relations to the Strait of Hormuz. This is an Australian journalist asking an Iranian citizen.
No, but it was also an Australian journalist that stood up and asked, what was the lady's name? Francesca, the lady, the special rapporteur on Gaza.
Albanese. Isn't that one Italian? Yeah.
Francesca Albanese.
Albanese, yeah.
Yeah, Albanese, yeah. She's Italian. Where he got up 2 years back, just after 7 October, literally in that following year of 2024, the guy got up and asked her, yeah, isn't it a trope of the so-called genocide that is being committed? But the global south were the ones labeling the term.
Yeah.
We could all see, because we all know what colonization is.
We have been there.
We all know what genocide looks like, specifically in these disputed global south areas,
which is
the developing
and
world.
And we know what freedom fighters are called when they're fighting.
We know what revolutionaries are. So we know all the labels. We know all these things.
That's not new.
So this guy gets up, because she was sent in to go and assess by the UN. Now, remember, a special rapporteur, Hamoud, is not a UN employee.
Yeah.
A special rapporteur is an independent specialist that everyone agreed on to say, let's send Helmut to go and investigate. Yes, you're getting paid. Yes, you're getting paid.
But we're just looking for transparency in terms of finding someone within, you know, an,
yeah, we're not
an
gonna
independent
send,
head person.
We're not going to send an American specialist or a... Israeli specialist or British specialist or someone that might have some. This person must not be.
We don't want any conflict of interest.
Yeah, this person must not be any affiliated to any of the governance, the governments associated to this conflict. That is Albanese. She was sent in. She made her report. She came out. She submitted the report. And what happened?
Oh boy, boy.
Then
boy.
The personal attacks began because of her report.
Personal attacks, her husband got demoted.
Yes, but because everybody agreed on sending her, that's what a special rapporteur does. Everyone agreed on saying, I'll appoint Dwight, we'll pay him the money. He goes into there and he goes finds it. But before we continue, ad break.
More. You get so much more with the ShopRite price, because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 750 mils Right brand sunflower seed oil, only 29 Namibian dollars 99. 5 kg top score super maize meal for only 69 Namibian dollars 99. And 2 kg Right brand golden brown sugar for a low 36 Namibian dollars 99. Deals valid until 19 July 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. We continue now. Now coming back from my content creator reference. I'm just sitting here referencing content creators and independent journalists, other media houses that try as much as possible to be transparent, transparent on much of this subject, like Zeteo with Mehdi Hassan. You have I do watch from time to time Democracy Now. And Jeremy Scahill is one of those. Jeremy Scahill is the first American independent journalist I started, whose works I started reading back in 2015. Mm. Yeah. And one thing that I've discovered is that, after looking at mainstream media, on a global level, is that a lot of them, mainstream media, have a lot of interest in criticizing the status quo. because you know, the information is as clear as daylight. Like the American, like the Australian journalist that I just referenced. I don't want to sit here and believe that she's an idiot, that she doesn't know what's going on. She knows what's going on. She's smart.
No, but are they really, Amon?
Look, the thing is, look, man, I can assume one person.
You do know they did that test last year in the US where they discovered that much of the ordinary American doesn't actually know that the American government is busy funding Ukraine.
Bombing the heck out of people.
And is funding what and doing what and doing funny things.
No, look, I think that's where propaganda becomes very powerful because, here's the thing. That's why, again, I agree with Noam Chomsky when he said that propaganda is to democracy what violence is to dictatorship.
So it helps it.
Look, in a dictatorship...
It literally helps it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In a dictatorship, if I'm a dictator and you criticize me, it's easy peasy. Mm-hmm. I'll just use you as an example.
For everyone else.
Yeah, you just disappear. And then everyone, you know, the person that will come asking where Dwight is, they'll also disappear. And then no one will come asking where the person that asked about Dwight is.
Now, and the person who came and asked about me also disappear.
Now, from that, everyone gets the message that, you know what, don't ask.
Don't ask,
yeah.
You will disappear.
Yeah, it's very straightforward in a dictatorship. But in a democracy, because the end goal for both methods is control.
Mm.
Yeah. What you're going to end up with is in a democracy, you don't have this direct way of making people disappear.
Mm.
Now, that means you have to be ahead of whatever information is that is that threatens your interest.
Oh, did I tell you the story of what happened when I went to that NSA thing about their website?
No.
I didn't tell you the story. Okay. So I thought it was like a newsworthy event situation. I tell, you know, I give my short little diary of where I'm going for today if there are events. Yeah. I get here and I read the thing again because I don't see any other media people there. And I read the thing again. I'm like, what event did I say yes to? Because sometimes you just set up your calendar and you just schedule stuff.
Yeah, on this day I'll be attend this event.
Yeah,
you know,
so
this event
so that you know, and then every night you check beforehand where you're probably going. And I forgot to check beforehand the invite and everything. All I knew is that the lady that we studied together marketing at Polytechnic, she asked me on the group, listen, Dwight, are you still coming? And I said, yes, I'm on my way. So I get there and I see no other media people. Just me. And then I read the thing again. I was like, oh, so they want insights from us about what the website, you know, what role the NSA website plays in terms of data, sharing information and being up to date with various reports and stuff. So I had very little to contribute because I benefit so much from the NSA website.
Mm-hmm.
Mar, during the coffee break. So the Norwegian, he's from Norway's statistics agency. Because they are here also like to help the NSA like properly, you know, have like a website that speaks to properly dispensing information and stuff like that, and to be visible as well, potentially.
Yeah.
Now, on my right were three people from an investment house who's recently in the news. Not directly. Not directly, but yeah. So the guy that's sitting here, in the coffee break, me and the Norwegian are talking. His name is also John. Me and the Norwegian are talking. And the Norwegian, we're talking like basic communication observations that he has seen. Like how Namibians love using social media as a reference for information. And it actually struck me that we Namibians, we trust social media posters more than we actually trust the website of, let's say, Eagle FM's website, you know, that hosts the stuff. And then we just tag things to our social media accounts so that when the viewer sees the thing in our social media account, they can click that site and then get trafficked to our website.
Yeah.
So that our website can pull traffic to the website, you know. No. Namibians, he said he's so surprised how he saw we Namibians put more emphasis and we solidly believe that social media is an actual sort of like true resource and not websites. And I said, you're right. And then we meander into a dimension of the discussion where it's based upon how information gets shared and the perspective you must have on information. Now, Helmut, I think you've realized what the exercise that I've done, why I always go for original official documents,
yeah,
or research papers, or research reports, or annual reports, or historical reports, is because I go for documents that speak to verification. I cannot go to Helmut's post of 10 years ago, where Helmut probably was a 15-year-old, has deleted that post and forgot what he said back then, and then say, that is an authority. Because in some cases,
yeah,
you just need things to be set in stone. They should have been codified and stuff like that. So the conversation goes there. And I make a comment about, you know, many people don't realize how important information is. And I slightly just tell him about the Access to Information Act, and we need this thing to be there, and how it technically has to help compel, like, the ministries, like, for example, Ministry of Health and Ministry of of Home Affairs, to basically, and Ministry of Labor, to continuously, you know, generate data that says jobs, vacancies, people that lost jobs, people born, people that died.
Mm-hmm.
How many people come in every month into the country, stuff like that, you know, basic data metrics or data points. So the guy from the investment house stands in and then he just interjects this slightly by saying, yeah, but still, you know, us, the experts, must still be in the pipeline to help explain the information to them, to the media as well. And I look at this guy going like that, thinking to myself, look at this guy. You don't know. And this is what people don't understand, specifically like in the movie, when it comes to the information,
yeah,
the information wars now. Helmut, reference, there's a reason why we went to university.
Yeah.
For example, you and I. You were taught referencing. Where did you read this?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me where you read it.
Yeah.
Do you understand what you read? That thing that Anga Bona once said about listening and comprehension. Can you listen? Can you read to understand?
Yeah.
Can you write to understand? Listening and comprehension skills. And I believe, there's a great threat, specifically for the Namibian landscape, for Namibians, of propaganda manipulation.
We can easily
be manipulated if someone just has dedicated money, meaning enough money, enough pockets.
Yeah.
To run enough propaganda campaign
on anyone, they get away with it
long enough, that it can actually turn the whole public against anyone. If anything happens like what has happened, like in the US, in the UK, and so on, even in South Africa, you just have to use a South African.
Remember in 20, I think the scariest example of that would be Turkey, I think 2016, when Erdogan was this close to being overthrown in,
Wasn't it the guy that they also arrested?
A lot of people got arrested. Erdogan likes arresting after that.
People. Yeah.
Look, there's an excellent African example of that happened in Ghana in the 1980s.
Yeah.
Now, in the Ghana, in the early 1980s, the Americans did not have a very good relationship with Ghana. I think they wanted to topple the president.
Mm.
Now, what happened was they sent a CIA officer. I think her name was Sharon Scrunnage.
Mm.
It's a very funny story. Now, she goes to Ghana, and then she met a gentleman Michael Sosodis was the president's cousin.
Mm.
Yeah, and he was also working for the intelligence. The two started sharing bedroom stories. Bedroom stories. And I don't know how good, homeboy was at representing us in the bedroom. She decided to spill all the beans. Now, the whole...
if you just kept it at sharing smarties, we could have moved on past it.
I'm very proud of the guy. He represented us very well.
He has to represent Africa.
He represented Africa very well. Now, the thing is, the whole operation fell apart because of that relationship.
Whose operation? The American operation
American operation.
Or the Ghanaian operation?
Yeah, the American operation.
Yeah.
The Ghanaian operation was well represented. Successfully, using a very unconventional sword, might I say. But,
oh my goodness. Don't worry, guys, this is not every day that this happens.
Look, my point is...
Look, Ahmed, as the quicker we can move past this point, man, the better. Your point is yes?
Yeah, look, my point is when the whole, you know, when the whole operation blew apart,
yeah,
army generals in the Nigerian military were arrested because they were fined to, they were found to have links, to have known, to have, to would have been participated in the overthrowing of their own president.
Yeah.
So, you know, you are talking about infiltration here, which is a very simple, that's the most basic thing that basically everyone should know about intelligence. It doesn't start, you know, if you, you take, for example, you know, a president is overthrown today. When you look at how long it has taken, or it must have taken to put all these pieces in place, it doesn't take 24 hours.
Yeah.
It takes decades.
Yeah.
So, when you look at it, so when you look at it from that, you begin to, you know, to understand that, information, I think, when you look at it from a Ghana's example, minus the world representation, is that, I'm not into politics is very scary because it leaves you as a, you know, you leave yourself as a vacuum to be fed by information that is very incendiary. And, these are information that anyone can fall for. And, looking in South Africa as an example, is one thing that you see is that there's a lot of things that doesn't make sense in reference to the basic definition of, okay, you don't like immigrants. Can you at least help me define what the word immigrant is?
Yeah.
And a lot of people that are participating in the march can do something as basic as you know, as basic as that.
Yeah.
When you look at it, you know, at that angle, you begin to realize just how easy it is to manipulate a large number of people.
Then, but that's why I said, Ahmed, this whole thing is a racist...
to the core.
It's racist to the core. Now, it's literally in an African personification of what happened during the Great Depression, how the failed Austrian painter came to power, how Mussolini came to power. Yeah. What did they do? They start blaming the immigrants, then it starts flowing to the minorities, then it starts flowing to the religious entities. So... And this is what the South Africans don't want us to look at. But before that, we've got an ad break, guys, and we come back right after that.
Yep.
Okay, my turn.
Hold on, just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was... Oh, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamwiri nawa. Ninge kwa Fanona, Monica, Ko, Eagle FM, Honore Tatuimwe, Bari Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bari, No Heali, Ileko Berewa, Vora Hetatu Natu, Bari O Hetatu Watatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, The Eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Nah.
We're back, guys, with more jokes. We realize there's a lot of things happening on this continent.
That's why when people say that politics is boring,
yeah,
I don't get it.
Okay.
Because
okay.
politics
okay. is... It's probably that if people look at a Namibian perspective, it's boring.
Really?
No, really, Hamoud. Uh-huh. Look, there might be gold for you in certain scenarios, you know?
Yeah.
If some of the politicians borrowing from events that have happened back in last year,
yeah,
like what happened to the Orange Squad, where the independent guy, the Inkietmans decided to go full on Breaking Bad. I don't understand some people. They think politics is about throwing fists, but you know what? It happened already. But when you get into the broader African discussion, I just told Helmut now off air about the discussion I had on Sunday for my Sunday morning take about the Congo crisis, where in preparation for it, I realized, Helmut, that Lumumba is he's responsible for his own downfall. Because what happened at that time, is Lumumba was in a political alliance with a guy known as, what was the guy's name? Tochman. I almost said Sakavubu. That's not his name. But this guy was the president. Lumumba was prime minister.
Yeah.
Lumumba wanted to remove that guy's powers, and that guy wanted to remove his prime minister's powers. Now, it sounds very similar to the story you told us about.
Yeah.
Of Kenyatta and Odinga.
Yeah, Odinga Senior.
Yeah. Where they were debating on how the country should
be
run.
Be run, yeah.
Now, Helmut, the Congo crisis, literally, is in a span of 5 years. From 1960 to 1965. And in that five-year period, Mobutu Sese Seko was authoritarian leader twice.
Seseko.
Let me say it again. And do you know what is his full name? Okay. Joseph Mobutu. Mobutu Sese Seko comes from some. His full name is Joseph. Even there was also a recent deputy minister that was voted in start of this year.
Oh.
She shows up with a name that
I've never heard of. I have one interesting fact for you about that guy.
About who?
Mobutu Sese Seko.
His
first wife's name was Marie Antoinette.
You're joking, bro.
Spouse.
No, you're joking, bro.
I don't know what he was thinking, but I think maybe bro was in love with France and Belgium so much, or whether it's him or the wife's parents.
Marie Antoinette was her name. It was probably it was probably at that stage. Haven't you realized that every generation, Amut, there's like a favorite name that
we had a governor called Adolf Hitler. I mean, no surprises there.
No, he wasn't governor. He was a national council.
National council member. Yeah.
From where was it?
Was he at some point a painter?
I hope not.
No, I'm just saying.
I hope not. Yeah. But yeah, so.
Yeah, and the mustache didn't help either. I've seen the pictures.
Literally, can you believe that guy literally?
Look, that
he
was
literally mimicked even
look,
the.
That
mustache.
Was my favorite part about the whole thing. It was. Wonderful.
It's Africanized 100 years later.
Talk about reincarnation. So,
yeah.
Look, coming back to Trump and AFCFTA. you know, what Trump, you know, the stones that Trump is throwing in the direction of, you know, is throwing in the direction of, you know, of China. Was that last month when the French were throwing the same stone in the direction of, you know, in the direction of Israel? But it wasn't Israel. It was in an Israeli firm. Bleco.
Mm.
Yeah. Bleco is an Israeli company that was accused of interfering in the French elections. And this is the same thing, you know, this is the same, according to The Guardians, a French cybersecurity agency has accused an Israeli tech company, Bleco, of interfering in the Scottish elections earlier this year. And this is from 12 June 2026.
Yeah.
By targeting the First Minister, John Swinney. Now, then they also, you know, they also, one thing I find interesting about this is that, it also points out that, cybersecurity agency says, Blesco, the French cybersecurity agency, says Bleco, the Israeli tech firm, targeted John Swinney as well as interfering in the New York and French election. New York, in of course, that's we are talking about Mamdani here.
Mm.
Now, this is why I think what the French said, what the French said back in June, and what Trump is saying now, should bring us back to one very scary part about the direction that democracy is headed, at least from my point of view. There are a lot of hired actors out there that will, if you have money, they will do anything
for you. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In Australia proved this point.
Yeah. Now. If you have hired mercenaries and you have hired hackers, that means you can hire
a lobbyist.
You can hire a lobbyist.
You can hire an influential.
You can
person.
Hire an influencer. You can hire anyone. So yeah. That means if you find, if you find maybe not just a Bleco, you can find any tech firm of the caliber of Bleco, give them enough money, and they will interfere in any election you want them to interfere.
Amut, you're going too far. You can appoint your cousin to be a multiple WhatsApp manager, WhatsApp group manager.
That's a low scale of it. actually, a point of correction, that's a budget version.
That's all you need.
Yeah. So I think even though I don't believe the whole thing about China political interference, maybe it's true, maybe it's not, but
yeah.
Considering the source, hardly doubt.
Well, here's the thing, Hamoud. Let's not put firstly, let's not think about nation states as being unicorns and fluffy rabbits and angels and
that are holy. No.
Yeah. They do commit a lot of negatives and a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the guy's name? Okay, I won't mention his name because he's a fellow media professional. So I also won't say where he works. So he recently went 2 months back to Russia because Russia Today was inviting African governments that Russia has bilateral relations with.
Mm-hmm.
They were inviting like media companies from these African countries to go for like a 1 week, 5 day, workshop at Russia Today about content and presenting and seeing how Russia Today does their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's not eye opening things. How much you can watch a YouTube video on it, man. Until when it came to like the true content discussion,
as in framing.
Yeah, basically framing, perspective, and who to talk to. And he said, technically, they were basically trained on propaganda 101. If you talk to a person in the village in a war zone,
yeah,
that person in the village who is a resident of that village says,
yeah,
there are 20 people that were killed because of a war strike.
Yeah.
Nah. They literally told word for word, this is what he said. No, you don't talk to that person. You call the general in charge of communications for the army to confirm whether there are 20 people dead. Now, we've seen what the Israeli army has done.
Mm-hmm.
They literally run a counter-propaganda campaign.
They've upped their budget.
Remember the famous budget, the famous cameraman that you told us about so many times? The guy that reported where the bomb actually fell, and then everybody was looking for that guy because so many people lost their bets.
Uh-huh.
So it's that kind of a scenario because it's the reason why we as the media exist. Look,
okay, so you are looking at a lot of information warfare then going on here because the one thing I like about the US is that they have not hidden the fact that they don't like China very much, especially in relation to just how fast and competitive it's growing.
Even though they these two countries trade the most with each other. Actually as if China is like right next to US, like right here.
Uh-huh.
There is no Pacific Ocean. It's literally like the whole trade is just like this, Hamut, the whole time.
You know why I have concluded that, rich people are smart and poor people are dumb?
Mm.
It's because poor people know when to fight. Rich people know when to fight and when to trade.
Mm.
Yeah. You can look at a lot of countries that don't like each other. Mm. They are trading.
Mm.
Yeah. There's a lot
of political... And then they're even the biggest traders with each other.
Exactly. And if you find a bunch of broke people in these countries,
mm.
they hate each other to the core.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then they don't trade.
They don't trade. They hate each other. Mm. But their leaders who caused them to hate each other are talking and trading.
They even have WhatsApp groups with each other. Do you know what's the interesting thing? That actually, the point that we started off from, which was the protectionist discussion. Yeah. So, what was the thing that I read? Remember when we did the hydrogen review, the global hydrogen review by the IEA?
Yeah.
2 weeks back. Yeah. No, last week, yeah. When we did that report, Hamut, in the Africa side of things, in the special Africa chapter in chapter 8, and I wrote the article recently meant for the Villager in this week, it comes out that the technologies, well, it's not just that report. Sorry, it's not just that report. It's also this thing that I went to on Monday for the UNIDO, the rare earth minerals, this public lecture that was held at NUST as well.
Yeah.
So in both that report and in that discussion of the rare earth, you can basically see that a lot of the technologies, for achieving just energy transition and green industries development, industrialization,
mm-hmm.
all of these new technologies that would make us achieve these goals come from global north,
yeah.
or developed economies. The solutions, many of them, the solutions that just need a little bit more money. It's something that you and I can also think about, if we probably had the best level of education at that stage, but it's an opportunity that we're missing out on because the first technologies that can help with anything are technologies technically that come from the global north. And the global north also includes, for example, China as well, or places like China. Now, at the heart of this, you can literally see what's impacting us on the ground as Africa.
Yeah.
So on the ground, with reference to what you said about the poor people hating each other while their leaders are basically in the same WhatsApp group,
yeah.
Chatting with each other and sharing party selfies and indecent photos probably, is a scenario of what information does to the reality on a picture. Or to a reality that you didn't expect, for example. South Africa is the case study for this. Hamut, we will never achieve the level of being self-sufficient and saying in a report by the IEA or in a report by the Food and Agriculture Organization
mm-hmm.
or in a presentation done by the United Nations Industrial Development Organization, UNIDO, about All the solutions Africa has is right in front of you. We are giving you money just so that the solution technically becomes commercially viable. It's not a statement like that. It's not a statement that says, Dwight out there in the bush sits with the solution, just give the man money. Don't ask for the money back. Just make sure that the money is enough for his solution to become commercially viable. Then we know we've met, they obviously will do that as the UN, they will say, then they know they've met the actual goals of ensuring that something came to fruition for a positive, for a national good, for Namibia. But no, that's not what you will see, for example, in the South African case. Suddenly now, those immigrants are responsible for unemployment. But if you go look at the unemployment statistics, the South Africans are not going to school. Or they don't pass grade 12. Or they don't actually write their exams. Or they can't make it to the university. Now their political campaigns at one stage 2 years back was about allow people to enter freely into the university. But the universities tell them, but I need to maintain standards. What's a good project?
The teachers, the lecturers must be paid. The material must be bought.
Yeah. Eskom's lights keep flickering on and off.
Exactly. Renovations, the janitor, all these things will have to be paid for somehow.
Yeah, but Hamoud, that's the exact thing. It's scenarios like this on the African continent, in the African context, where we don't realize we are living in a modern world that Africans did not create. Africa was not at the forefront of creating this modern world. We were at the forefront of supplying for this modern world. If you read about that Congo crisis, for example, the Congo crisis starts from enlightened, woke, educated, urbanite Africans. Okay, let me be more specific, micro, because I'm now micro, making it micro to a Congolese discussion. So it was sophisticated. They were living in urban areas. They were educated. They had seen France, like your bra from Central African.
Yeah.
Yeah, that called himself emperor with his gold throne.
Yeah.
Because he once was in the French Foreign Legion, most.
Yeah.
And he saw the way of life in France. Mm-hmm. And he was a fanatic of Napoleon.
Very much.
Very much.
Yeah.
He believed he's an embodiment of Napoleon.
Uh-huh.
Him and Pol Pot. Yes. Pot was the same. Him and Pol Pot. They were the same. They were cut from the same cloth, just two different countries. Because Pot also went to go study was in France.
Yeah.
Pot was exposed to the jazz culture, the nightlife in Paris, and you know just how liberal things were. And then Pol Pot flies back and then decides his country needs socialism.
I think this is one thing that is a little scary about about the world of intelligence. Just a few days ago, it came out that at least from Iranian media, that the Western goal, at least the goal they had with regards to Iran, was that if the overthrowing of the government overthrow of Iran worked the same way that that the one of Venezuela did,
yeah.
The man who should have taken over power, and this is one of those things that's he said, she said, going on in much of the media sources that I've seen. The man who should have taken over would have been Ahmadinejad, the former president, I believe.
But Ahmadinejad lost an election.
He lost an election, and he has used all kinds of colorful language towards both America and Israel.
It's even now recently there's an article where he actually discredits the New York Times or the Times, whatever Times thing from the U.S. somewhere about they were saying apparently. He wants the Israelis to help install him into the office.
Wasn't that the Pahlavi?
No, not Pahlavi. Ahmadinejad. And Ahmadinejad had to write a personally signed and authored letter by him in the opinion pages for that publication It happened this week or last week. And he literally said, you guys are making outrageous claims. Do you see the narrative? Do you see the propaganda? Yeah. And the information war also happened.
Yeah, look, from the look of things, information is going to be... information has always been the center of, the center of war. There's a reason why we know a lot about the Roman Empire and not the Persian Empire. And that's because when you're talking about the Persian Empire, which was just one larger than life empire on its own.
Yeah.
Under Cyrus, under Darius, you don't hear a lot about them. Why? And they laid the foundation for a lot of mathematics and a lot of mathematics and math and science and geography concept we use today. You don't hear a lot of that.
Yeah.
Why did a lot of people find out, was that a year or two ago in the Western world, that the numbers they use are actually Arabic? Now, that's because the information about a lot of the sources of everything that has Arabic origin has been either Romanized or Westernized, and that's on purpose, not by accident. So, if the Russians or the Chinese, the Indians or the Europeans, the Americans are trying to carve out their own channel of information warfare, not just through media, but also electronically, in terms of of digital information. Here's the thing. How much progress are we making in either putting guardrails in place to make sure that that information type of warfare is not directed towards us, because whether we like it or not, we are going to need information, information conduits or information channels.
Okay. From the bet,
yes.
The solution,
yeah,
is if companies in this country promote their websites a lot more instead of promoting social media a lot more.
Yeah,
social media is the Helmut. We've proved, you and I, we've proved it with the pig butchering scam last year. We've proved it with, in some cases, sometimes how the not just from the pig butchering scam,
yeah,
but also from other indications of how, like with cybersecurity and with data protection, literally how the scams all start, and they all start from social media.
Yeah.
They all, and social media is not a legit like resource. It can help you in guidance, but it's not like a first go saying, yeah, I saw it on this and this person's post, and the person spells Robertson different from the conventional spelling of Robertson.
Uh-huh.
And then no one can find this guy because he puts, for the letter O, he puts a number 4, and for the E, he puts number 3 in, and it's just, basically everyone will think you're lying because you saw it in a guy whose name, whose Twitter handle or his Facebook profile name is Robertson. But the guy does that weird thing with writing names by using numbers as letters. So, certain scenarios like that. Because websites are resources. In the digital space, a website is gold.
The issue we have here is, especially when it comes to information, is that if we are going to follow the crowd, social media... A lot of people use social media daily.
Yeah.
Now, I think...
But social media is a conduit, like you also have
it. Yeah, it is a conduit, which is why, you just post a snippet of your information and then a link that directs traffic to your, traffic to your website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even the politicians and their communications teams, they will go and hashtag into infinity about... Hashtag everybody for the political campaign, but there's no website for the political campaign. There's no, like the manifesto is not hosted on a website.
Yeah.
On their political party website. No, the manifesto is hosted on Eagle FM's website with other manifestos. And then on their political party campaigning social media page. That's the other concern also.
When it comes to digital When it comes to you know, to the digital sphere of things, not just in research and investment, but the physical infrastructure that it runs on.
Yeah.
The expansion on that is going to put us, you know, is going to teach us a lesson that we have seen China learn and recently Iran, that dependency on foreign technology is a terrible idea.
Yeah. But it is about who we turn to in the intermediate future.
Yeah.
Or in the immediate, not intermediate. Yeah, it's intermediate and immediate.
Yeah. Now, when you look at it, take for example, if someone wanted to just cook up a smear campaign, if I, you know, I think this is where the regulation now comes in handy. Now, and, you and I know corporate espionage is real.
Yeah, but I've never seen it in Namibia. I've heard about it in the private sector media landscape.
Yeah.
Corporate espionage.
Now, when we talk about Africa Continental Free Trade Area, we are talking about a lot of corporate bodies in all across the continent interacting.
Yeah.
So that means you need a top-notch legislations to keep up because you are looking at a behemoth level of commercial activities. And you are looking at a lot of disputes that will pop up left, right, and center from a lot of different companies disagreeing on who should have gotten paid and who didn't get paid and who paid and did, who paid and did not deliver. But before continue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vivici University for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse Midwife or Accoucheur, Level 6. Certificate in Pharmacy, Level 5. Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences, Level 6. Bachelor of Social Work Honours. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours. Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Level 8. Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing, Level 8, Master of Public Health, and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Vilvicha University, where everyone is an achiever.
Welcome back. Take a break. Because sitting for 2 hours, no joke. Oh, but there's still more coming on the other side of the break. I'm when I come back, the first thing I'm gonna do is complain about my region, and then we'll continue from there with Omran.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's just a minute past the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, this is still a home run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM as usual here until the hour of 6. And we're talking about Africa Continental Free Trade Area. Now, if you don't know what that is, what we want to do as a continent, it turns out, from the African Union, an African Union initiative, basically the whole of 54, African countries, some 12 of them are debatable. We don't have time to, to get into that. But how can we trade with each other? Now, to trade with each other, we need to produce something that other African countries are willing to buy. Even after producing something that another African country is willing to buy, you will have to transport it there. So from producing something and transporting something, one thing that you need is energy. So I think this is why the whole nuclear energy, nuclear bill discussion, taking place in Namibia, is one that is, it's the right time to have that discussion. Because for African countries to trade with each other, they will have to produce something. To produce something, you need a lot of energy. To transport something, you need you need infrastructure, you need hardware. Now,
and not just from a mine,
the
port.
No,
please, guys, let's not be that ridiculous.
Let's not be that ridiculous. Yeah, you're right. I don't think protesting is a Kavango thing. guys are protesting with a Nigerian flag upside down.
With a what flag?
With a Nigerian flag upside down. Anyway.
How would you say? Why would you say that, Abud? That protesting is not a Kavango thing.
Clearly, it's not.
Why?
That's our protest flag, and the one below there is a Nigerian flag. We even got the flag wrong, but we got this. You go. Anyway,
what were they protesting about?
It's a peaceful protest. I mean, it's Kavango, so that's a no.
Oh, you don't want to snitch?
No, it's on our Facebook page.
Okay.
Yeah, members of the Kavango, please be Kavango West. Please be Kavango. Okay, come on.
It's Kavango.
Yeah.
Is it Anna Glitter? Is that Anna Glitter video?
Who else would it be? She don't snitch on us. But anyway. Just head over to our Facebook page. They say something delicious going on there.
Mm.
Anyway, when it comes to trade, we have to get a lot of things in place. But I find it fascinating that we want to start with a continent-wide currency, but we haven't first figured out.
Not just with a currency. Remember the central bank.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
A discussion hosted by a bunch of African countries who don't know what a central bank for the continent actually does to national identity of economies, and also who has to lose their currency and who should not. I mean, it is discussions like that, obviously, that also poses a lot of questions.
A few days ago, I would say, when did I send this? I just have to find. Still have Ivan here. I mean, this is the part where I would sing, but I don't want people to think that, I'm also protesting, just working here.
Why, Helmut? Why would you want to protest?
No, I just want I thought of humming to kill the silence, but I don't want people to go, I'm also protesting. By proxy.
Please don't, Helmut. Whatever you're doing, just don't do it.
No. Don't worry, I won't. Yeah, right here. Nigeria, Nigeria. This was on the 30th of June.
Mm.
Yeah, I sent this on the 30th of June. Yeah, What it basically points out was there was this report that was put out by Afriexim Bank of the 2025 Africa Continental Free Trade Area.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Nigeria seems to have made significant improvements in terms of rapid growth of trade relations and trade relations with with other countries. Nigeria seems to be Nigeria seems to be making more progress compared to a lot of other other African countries. But one challenge that they pointed out that that they faced in intra-Africa trade is transport.
Yeah.
And one thing that was one thing that Afriexim Bank found in their report in their analysis is that transporting let me just say cargo transport, because we are talking about large scale commercial activities here, cargo transport on the African continent, that will make Africa Continental Free Trade Area much more easier and much more feasible. It's actually very very expensive compared to a lot of other regions like Asia and South America.
No.
So clearly, and this is just based on the trade that was conducted on the African continent for the year 2025. So when you look at it, one thing that you see is that we first have to figure out the physical infrastructure.
Mm.
So clearly, before we start looking at, okay, Namibia, why can't you trade with Zambia or Zimbabwe? First find out, are there any roads? Are there any, if it's something that requires shipping, are there any vessels?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if there are any vessels, are these, what are we looking at in terms of African, let's just look at Africa's local. What are we looking at in terms of local ownership?
Mm.
Now, Monday, I believe, it turns out the MA, AMA, AMA, that's, something medical. No, that's just one article that I think is going to be in the, in the future e-villager newspapers.
Future?
Yeah, future.
Yeah.
Mm. Just have to steal HDC. Yeah, right here. It turns out the African Medicines Agency, African Medicines Agency, AMA, which is like a pharmaceutical or medical arm of the African Union.
Yeah.
It's headquartered in Rwanda, in Kigali. And this week they had they had a collaboration. They signed basically a memorandum of understanding with the Medicine for Africa. This is a pro patient type of pharmaceutical industry proponents that is based, I believe, in Joburg, South Africa.
Yeah.
So they signed a memorandum of understanding to basically coordinate forces to combat unregulated medical prescription, which is also not just costing lives, especially in DRC, but also costing countries a lot of money in terms of taking care of the people that suffer from taking medicine that is not prescribed by doctors. And one thing they found was that a lot of these drugs that either have been mislabeled or they are not well assessed in terms of their active ingredients and the negative side effects of these meds. All these things are causing a lot of health issues, which now have to be attended to by the legitimate health ministry or health institution of that particular country, costing that country a lot of money. Most of this medicine is coming into the continent, is being smuggled in, and some of the culprits they found to participate in the frequent use of unregulated, unprescribed medicine, making this situation worse.
Yeah.
Unsurprising, your M23 type of guys.
Oh.
Yeah. So, Which I totally understand. It's not like you can walk with a AK-47 in Katura Health, you know, hospital, and then sit in that queue patiently. Go, don't mind me. It's just a gun.
I'm just here.
Yeah, just here. Have a little bit of a headache from all the explosions.
Not doing anything special or particularly dubious. Yeah. Besides the whistling.
But they are going to have a formal conference-ish type of engagement in around September. Also,
who helmed the smugglers? No,
definitely not the smugglers.
Oh.
Yeah, the AMA, who are the Africa Medicine Agency and the Medicines for Africa. Now, when you look at it, from this point, one thing that's also worth looking at is how much of what you consume are you producing? Because for me, Africa Continental Free Trade Area is, you know, we'll have to look beyond the extractive industry.
Yes. And,
unless we have to start processing.
Yes and no. Hamoud, there's one thing I'm proud of this continent that we have, that we are actually building up to be strong in, is the agro-processing.
Yeah.
So we've got South Africa in southern Africa, yeah. But then you are seeing Zambia is also very strong in it. Namibia wants to now actively be very strong in this. Zimbabwe has always been there. So I'm already counting four countries in SADC. You cascade over into, for example, potentially DRC something, because we only know DRC for either being unstable because of the east of DRC, and primarily because of DRC's richness or its...
In terms of natural resources.
Obviously, natural resources. But many people don't know at the scale that DRC has, you don't hear of like severe hunger or malnutrition scenarios in DRC. Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably back then in the 90s when, the continuous conflict was so bad for them. But today, you don't hear about it. It's just the problematic east, the continuing war of words,
mm-hmm.
and the lawlessness that the eastern part of DRC suffers from. And further much, all we know is that they've just got a lot of resources.
Well, thank you for bringing up DRC.
Yeah.
Want to hear something?
Yeah.
When it comes to 2025 AFC, the Inter-Africa Trade, which is basically Africa Continental Free Trade Area, 2025, they looked at, Northern Africa, Southern Africa, East, West, Central, but let's just focus on in Central part of Africa. In Central Africa, the Democratic Republic of Congo was a major player in inter-Africa trade, with its total of inter-Africa trade rising from 4.7% in 2024 to 6.74% in 2026. Now, South Africa remained DRC's primary bilateral trade partner, with the region accounting for a bulk of Democratic Republic of Congo's imports on the continent.
Mm.
Yeah. Port. Now,
import.
Deben. Mm. So, just now, that's where the next part now becomes very, well, painful for South Africa and the... a little bit of a hooray for Angola.
Mm.
Yeah, as Africa's largest producer of copper and the world's top producer of cobalt, the DRC exported significant volumes of refined copper to South Africa, primarily transported via the National Railway Company network to the port of Durban.
Mm.
Is this really intra-Africa trade?
It doesn't sound like trade. It sounds like that funny thing that one time when we did like the macro statistics or the macro analysis of what the NSA releases about Namibia's trade reports.
Yeah.
And we saw that high number of copper. Remember that one time when we did it last year?
Yeah.
We saw that high quantity of copper in the one analysis, and we were like, is this really all Namibian copper, or is this Zambian copper?
That's Zambian
copper. Because we know the Zambian copper drives through Namibia.
Yeah.
So it's probably a scenario like that. Now it shows up as trade. Because definitely the truck has to declare what it's carrying at the borders. When it exits from Zambia, when it enters into Namibia, when it comes back, it has to declare it's empty. and it has to declare its exit, it's entering Zambia again. So definitely the truck has to do that. The transport company has to do this. Yeah. But in the broader scheme of things, when we look at this discussion, at the heart of it, you've got to ask, is this trade? Or is this just allowing a passage?
You know,
giving allowance.
The question, the key question there, Dwight, is this a trade?
Yeah.
I think the answer is yes, but is it an intra-Africa trade?
Yeah. Does it benefit Africa, or does it, is it still, once again, the resources going to another market?
Yeah.
Where the actual market is, where the actual products are made.
Where it's being processed, because through the processing, that's how you create employment.
Yeah. But somewhere else.
Yeah. Now, but here's the thing. So, technically, as a politician, you are creating employment just in Europe and China.
Technically, in trade and economics, it's not really trade. It's just allowing the thing to drive across the
transit.
Border.
Yeah. Now, then the Afri-Exim Bank report now points to something that's very interesting. That also that is going to impact Namibia. That as of 2025, however, DRC has been seen pivoting its mineral logistics strategy towards the Lobito Corridor group.
Towards
the Lobito Corridor. Now,
because it definitely seeks this avenue for reaching the closest port facility, and Durban is far.
Yeah, and then they get
goodness, Durban is far, guys. I know it's quick.
Yeah.
Through Zambia. Through Zimbabwe. South Africa, Zimbabwe, then you're into DRC.
Yeah.
Nah. But it depends on from where the mining complex is.
Yeah.
Where is the mine positioned?
Yeah, and I think it's just a matter of, if you look at it from a terrain, and not just not terrain, like a location of the two countries. I mean, Angola. I mean, Lobito is in Angola. Angola and DRC are neighbors.
Yeah, but Lobito is on the Atlantic coast, and Durban is on the Indian coast. So Durban, the positioning of Durban, is to channel eastwards to Asia, to Australasia, to the Middle East.
Yeah,
probably through the Suez to get quicker to this eastern part of Europe.
Yeah.
If you're on the Atlantic coast of Africa, you're channeling to North America.
North America and South
to
America.
Western Europe.
Yeah.
You're not even channeling to South America. South America has their own copper. What must they do with your copper?
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, Chile alone is South America's Zambia and DRC. Chile alone is South America's Zambia and DRC together because of the copper they've got there. So, If you look at this discussion specifically, in terms of transportation, you could see for the Congolese, Lobito does make possibly some sort of a sound case, because you're bringing the transport linkage into DRC. You can basically say it's quicker for you to get here.
Plus, they are linked by the project.
Yeah, by the project, yes. And they are investing in the project.
Yeah.
Because now all you've got to do is just get to that connecting point in DRC that then allows the uploading of the resource onto the train, and the train just runs directly into Angola.
Yeah.
Because DRC does border onto Angola.
Yeah.
And it runs straight. Do you know what's the big concern here, Hamoud? It's because of Zimbabwe in between. You're coming out of DRC. You have to declare at Zimbabwe, go through Zimbabwe, declare at Zimbabwe to South Africa, go and then go to South Africa to get to Durban, through the whole South Africa to get to Durban. That is the distance. That's why I was like, it's far to Durban.
Speaking of a distance, according to the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, UNCTAD, logistics cost in Central Africa remained among the highest globally, hindering deeper regional integration.
But here's the thing. The Congo River is so deep, Helmut. It's not the world's deepest river.
Yeah.
The Congo River is so deep. A ship can sail up the Congo River.
You know what we are waiting for? Someone to invest in that ship. And then we'll say, you know what? Because it's in our river, we want a 50% stake. That is the...
And the ship comes
That's
from,
the COVID-19, you know, in African thinking. It's spreading really fast.
Too fast.
Yeah.
But you were still saying, yeah, you were still saying...
Yeah, it's a... Well, now, you're looking at... again, I mean, I'm reading this, and it's coming from... an African bank that prides itself as you know the continent's import export you know enthusiast, except you know much of the you know we're talking about okay you know what in Central Africa DRC played a very significant role in terms of inter-Africa trade. No, they didn't. They were shipping stuff out of the continent, so that South Africa didn't buy it. It was just going through South Africa. Now, this is why I'm saying when we talk about inter-Africa trade, and our first go-to is this is how much you know this is how much trade that Namibia conducted with Angola, and you know that trade involved Namibia, you know, shipping a lot of you know minerals to the port in Angola.
Yeah.
I have limited understanding of economics, but I'm not counting that as Namibia and Angola trading.
If you see this little diagram, this is what the Lupito corridor looks like. This is the development.
Yeah, that makes a lot of logistical sense.
Yeah. Do you see the short distance?
Yeah.
Nah? The obvious concern you can obviously see here is that this thing, in many scenarios, does just serve the extractive industry.
Yeah.
Now, I asked in my Google search the difference between Lobito and Durban.
Yeah.
And the AI explainer wanted to now cite there that DRC and Lobito and Durban serve two different markets, which is the thing that I explained basically also. Because the case that Indian Ocean ports of South Africa helps to connect Southern Africa to primarily China, and primarily India, and primarily Australia. They are three large manufacturing markets.
Mm-hmm.
Lobito takes you where? Lobito tries to serve a European and a North American market. So, if you look at, which was the geography I already outlined, if you look at this, you can immediately identify that, okay, you know that the Zambians, the Congolese, and the Angolans are trying to get to a North American, Europe, West European market.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we here in close proximity to South Africa, that's now us, Botswana, Zimbabwe, and Mozambique, we know that South Africa channels a lot of trade, specifically from China, and specifically from India, through them to the rest of us. So the linkage is primarily East Asia, Middle East, to Far East Asia, to Oceania, and then the Indian Ocean territories. And believe you me, China and India are hungry, Helmut, for resources.
Doesn't China like have a bunch of resources?
Yes, they do. But they are still gobbling up more.
Yeah.
They are
an industrial powerhouse. It makes sense.
They are resource hungry.
Let's continue with the definition of trade in this Africa Continental Free Trade Area. So, for me, you know, every time I look at inter-Africa trade and I see diamonds, gold, all kinds of resources being shipped to a port, I'm not counting that as inter-Africa.
Yeah.
That stuff is leaving the continent. So yeah. We have to... That's a very loose definition.
Yeah.
Now, South Africa, on the other hand, has a very interesting, you know, trade statistics, which I give... a little credit in comparison to, you know, to DRC because of the products that dominated their inter-Africa trade, you know, trade statistics. South Africa's export continued to grow rapidly with the data from International Trade Center showing that machinery, vehicles, electrical equipment, and processed materials are the main exports to the rest of the continent.
Yeah.
Processed material.
Not the final product.
Processed material.
The...
Processed food products, chemicals. And this is what South Africa is. Now, that is intra-Africa trade.
Yes.
The vehicles part, we'll talk about that.
Well, you don't want PTSD about that helmet or trauma.
Yeah, like, okay, okay. When you are, look, the processing part.
Yeah.
The processing part. You know, if there's something that, you know, it's South African brand, it's being, you know, it's being, the raw materials, most of it is being sourced from, you know, in Africa, and it's in, processed and packaged in South Africa and sold to other African countries. I think that's what intra-Africa, intra-Africa trade or Africa Continental Free Trade Area should be about.
Yeah.
Not this country shipped this much gold to the port.
Or the gold was just dipped, washed, polished a little bit.
Yeah, it was then.
And then put on put in a nice case, which is Kama processing, and then loaded up onto a proper train car. And now the train is...
Send it off.
Yeah, being sent off through a port. Yeah, not that kind of a thing.
Because, I mean, South Africa is really, you know, for me, I will give a lot of credit to South Africa, Nigeria, and Egypt. Now, for I think, you know, minerals, fuels, and in Southern Africa... in Southern Africa, imports remained concentrated in mineral fuels amid persistent energy constraint, thanks to block equals unblock.
Which is back on, by the way.
It's back on, by the way. And in Southern Africa, again, Southern Africa, this is why, you know, SADC is very, you know, very awesome. Because in South Africa, you have precious metals being, you know, being traded, but we are also looking at the textile and processed food. Textile, in other words, sell each other what you are producing yourself.
Now, it does not say, go and sell me the Levi jean that imported, that I am also importing.
Not that.
We're not saying sell someone else's processed thing or ready-made thing.
Yeah.
Make your own jean. If it's Karakul jean, yes, make it and sell it and export it. Don't come and sell me the same Levi. Which is actually a bit weird, but yeah. Which is actually telling the order with me.
Look, when we're, because look, that's a good point to make, because if we're talking about industrialization,
yeah,
we're talking about making stuff that we sell.
Yeah.
So that Africa can, you know, Africa can make stuff that it consumes and consume stuff that it, you know, that it makes, because right now that's not the case.
Yeah.
We're just, you know, we just have potential.
We continuously stay...
the side of the break.
Get a you save today, where every penny counts. 1 liter Clover Long Life Milk, just 22.99 Namibian dollars. 500 grams of everyday yogurt, just 24.99 Namibian dollars. A 500 gram brick of Rama 70% fat spread, just 26.99 Namibian dollars. Discounted prices on Rhodes, Ten Food, and You Save brand jams too. You Save, your low budget grocery store, where good food costs less.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu honda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM di ae.
Welcome back. Trading with each other on the African continent level, easier said than done.
Yep.
Yeah, but I think, slowly but surely we're going to get there. It's just that we have to move in the direction more of implementing rather than condemning.
Yes, yes, and yes. Why? with reference to the tourism discussion we had back on Tuesday, no?
Back on
Wednesday. Yeah, back on Wednesday. With reference to that tourism discussion about the tourism trends for the world that saw more people actually flying, but actually Africa and Europe benefiting more because of the block plus block equals unblock. I would like to see what that, the next 3 months into June looked like from April to June, because it does really show that there is a positive lining somewhere for tourism markets like Africa. But the tourism markets now also means that we have to activate local tourism markets. Local tourism markets, Helmut, are in a scenario of are Namibians flying to the rest of Africa and are the rest of Africa flying to Namibia?
Now, did you look at that yesterday?
But this is the nightmare of March and March, which we also spoke about a little bit earlier in today's show.
Yeah.
This is what March and March doesn't want. They don't want African migrants.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a tourist, or if you're just flying through a country, you're a migrant nonetheless. Hence your reason, the explainer you highlighted there, where people were asking much and much, define migrant, define immigrant.
Yeah.
Define it for us.
Yeah.
Because anyone that flies to you, even if they're just here for a holiday visa, is a migrant.
Yeah.
It's just that this person is temporarily going to be here. You know they're going to be here. They got permission to be here. They're a tourist. And then they're going to go back.
Yeah.
Now, that is what we've got to deal with. Now, at the heart of AFCFTA is the Free Movement of People Protocol that you and I did in 2024. Mm-hmm. The Free Movement of People Protocol looks at removing, basically, border regulations.
Mm-hmm.
So technically making a border porous. Making it porous.
And
Making it porous, which brings us back to the Brexit thing where you highlighted the Polish.
Now that you brought that up, the thing is, one aspect of Africa Continental Free Trade Area that is going to come with is if we are going to learn anything from South Africa and South Africa and panel of the wise is that with all the trade relationships is going to come a lot of security concerns.
Mm.
Yeah. Because you will have good people in between African countries that will just be trading. And you will have bad people exploiting that border flexibility to run away from from the authorities in their country.
Yeah.
So that means you will need as Africa Continental Free Trade Area progresses in terms of implementation, we will also need not just lawmakers but also security clusters in all 54 countries to talk to each other.
Yeah. Basically.
They will have to talk to each other so they know what's going on in a security cluster in Egypt, what's going on in the security the security cluster of the Central African Republic.
Helmut, that sounds like spying.
Not really. what you don't want, and this is the biggest problem with immigration.
Yeah.
You have people that have done something illegal in their country, and they run to a different country claiming to be an immigrant.
Mm.
And that's a genuine concern when it comes to immigration. So it would be very naive to assume that when Africa Continental Free Trade Area or intra-Africa trade or intra-travel trade is in full swing, only good people will be visiting different countries. How many times have we read stories of Western tourists flying with their spouses to Africa or any other parts of the world and then ended up being investigated for the murder of the very spouse they came with on vacation.
Okay, so you're talking about the guy in Cape Town.
Yeah. Yep.
The guy, the British guy.
Yeah, the British who is black with the Zimbabwean surname.
No, not that guy.
There's a different one.
Yeah, the millionaire, the Indian British guy. British Indian guy.
Yeah.
The very famous way he hired the two South African guys to technically kill his wife. While they are on honeymoon. Why?
Who thinks of murder when they are on honeymoon?
Well, that guy, because he wanted to activate the insurance policies back in the UK.
Hang on a second. Homeboy got married with that purpose in mind.
It seems so.
Jeez.
It seems so, Helmut.
Until death do us part. That's a little sooner, don't you?
Well, what he did was about, you know, on another level, but yeah.
Oh, boy.
Guys, if you want to divorce, just divorce.
Yeah. That's what the president of Botswana said, that people have this negative way of looking at divorce. But you have to understand that they didn't murder each other. Just thank them. They have reached a point where they're like, you know what, sweetheart, you know, this sweet don't turn sour. You know, let's just say, you know, but
this what doesn't turn sour.
Yeah, you know, well, read the room. When the sweetheart turns sour heart, just, you know, cut your, you know, cut ties, and the courts will be there to say, okay, you know what, well, before we would ask who cheated on who, but now we just want to know one thing. Can you fix it? If the answer is no, please sign here, and better luck next time.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, so, so my point is, every time that you bring a large number of people together, they are bound to be a security concerns, which is why we have, you know, established police departments, or more like security clusters, because the reason behind that is when you bring a large number of people, like we see in a lot of urban areas, a lot of people just do all kinds of crazy things. So you need law enforcement to maintain law and order.
Yeah.
So when you have a lot of African countries trading and a lot of Africans moving in between different countries, not just good people are going to move that are trading. You have people that will want to run away from their illegal activities back home. So you'll want to, but Africa has its own Interpol. Turns out it's called Afropol. Jesus. But the thing is, it makes a lot of sense to be, on top of the game in terms of fighting crime. Yeah. Now, my only problem is, now I'm just sitting here watching my, you know, NAMPOL working with the Zambian police, with the Botswana police.
And they're all being helped by the German police.
Yeah.
Actually, the German police helps the whole of Africa. So, helps the whole Afripol. The German police helps the whole Afripol,
yeah,
to do their work.
And you have police officers in different countries, fighting over how to interact with a suspect. You don't just go around asking the money. You first have to, Jesus, okay.
Why did you stop halfway, Amut?
Because I'm just thinking about all kinds of videos that I've seen about a lot of countries, police officers in other African countries. Look, they say there are a lot of truck drivers that drive through Namibia. Yeah, that like to make videos about just how easy it is to interact with the police in Namibia. And just how beautiful the country is and the road and everything. But there's one that made one on, that made one on police officers. That, when I show up at a checkpoint, I don't have crap to worry about, because I know that, the cargo I'm carrying, my documentation and everything is in order.
Yeah.
That's all they're asking about. unlike some other countries where when they are asking for papers, they are not asking for your document papers. They are asking for other type of papers. The one with
they are asking back. For them for the missing,
for the missing pages in your passport. Look, that's a genuine African continental free trade area concern. We will, you know, the AU will have to address.
Yeah.
Because truck drivers, you know, they are transcontinental, you know, they are transcontinental drivers. They are driving across different African countries, and they are experiencing security cluster, you know, interaction in all these countries that they are crossing.
Yeah.
And in some, they are like. You know, can I have your passport? You give them a passport. It's like, you know what? They are missing pages here.
Mm.
Now, they know you have to bribe them. Now, that's just another problem. Whether that is just a greedy, you know, as a result of greed on the side of the police officer, or it's because, you know, the country's leadership have stolen so much, they don't have a reliable, you know, payroll. For their security cluster. These are still concerns that must be addressed on an AU level.
Yeah.
Why are police officers in your country looking for extra pages in my passport? Is it their problem, which means you have to clean house? Or is it your problem, as in you don't just pay them fair enough?
Yeah. It's those concerns, Helmut, specifically that, I remember. It was a wonderful idea two of my siblings had about importing tea from Kenya.
Yeah.
The Kenyans already processed the tea for you. You just have to repackage the thing and sell the thing.
Yeah.
So two of my siblings approached a trucking company in Windhoek, and that guy says, listen, there's no problem.
I don't mean to.
There's no problem sending the truck that side, but because his rate was something like 1,000 or something like 10,000 a day. or 1,000 a kilometer that he was going to charge. Because he says the insurance he has for the truck only covers Namibia, South Africa, Botswana, Zambia, and Zimbabwe.
And they know the risks in this country. So the price is set to that. So.
Yeah, but he says, on the other side of Zambia, I don't know what happens to my truck. I don't know where my truck is. I don't know where my truck driver is. And then he
said, I don't know how safe both are.
Yeah. And he said that, right? And then my siblings were like, why? Because he literally says, we don't know the business culture on the other side of certain countries in SADC.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually shows you SADC has one major particular thing, which you already highlighted.
Yeah.
Now, scenarios like that also makes tourism weird.
Yeah.
Back in 2010, Helmut,
yeah.
There was this phenomena of, but before that, we've got an ad break, guys.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25 Namibian. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99 Namibian. Get 2 kg of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99 Namibian. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99 Namibian. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99 Namibian. You Save. Where else?
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Actually 14 minutes left to the hour of 7. You're still listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. So, Dwight, back in 2010.
As a Namibian, if you get a visa and everything, and you go to another country. So travel insurance just helps you with if you get injured or something happens to you on the other side, Hamoud. But it's now like a requisite that you must
Have for you to travel.
Yeah, somewhere. If you get on a plane to get in, specifically for Europe and some of the Asian countries.
Yeah.
But travel insurance started popping up here in 2010, Gutersa. Specifically for a lot of these Namibians and South Africans who were told, because at that stage Mozambique was now like calming down. Mozambique was the place to be for party animals. You could drive from Windhoek with your car through northern South Africa, oops, to Maputo. And you could party in Maputo for like end of year party, Gutersa. And it was the scene. But then, the one colleague I had at the time asked the person, this one insurance broker who was promoting this product at the time in advertising, she asked the guy, why has this product now become hot stuff? And he said basically it's because of the stories and the events that specifically South Africans and Namibians and rich Zimbabweans and rich Botswanans are experiencing in Mozambique. Mm-hmm. At that time, Mahmoud, if you are driving, let's say you are driving, you're on the way. Imagine you're there in Kavango East, yeah, where you don't have these fences that you see here between Windhoek and Okahania and Windhoek and, you know, these farming fences, which are known as sort of like those border fences,
yeah,
between the public land, which is the road and the corridors next to the highway. And the private land, which is owned on the other side of those fences, so they don't have something like that in most cases of Mozambique. And the guy explained to her that villages next to the roads, the children would run in front of these cars, or the parents or an adult would throw the child in front of the car, and you accidentally now run over or bump the kid. And now you are stuck there because these Mozambicans, who are rural Mozambicans, would then extort you for money.
You're going to throw your kid in front of a moving 30-ton truck for money?
Not a 30-ton truck, a bucky, fully loaded, or an SUV,
well,
fully loaded.
Well, it doesn't
matter,
but that doesn't sound like good parenting at all.
No, it doesn't, but it's also one of the scenarios if you look at the differences in living standards between the SADC countries specifically.
So it's a desperation.
It's a desperation issue as well. Because Mozambique is a country that annually gets rampaged or ravaged by tropical storms because of the Indian Ocean rainy season.
Yeah.
So that's the issue specifically that Mozambique was unfortunately prone to at that time. So travel insurance has now become like a main thing. But now here's the concern. And my concern is specifically not fully xenophobic like the South Africans. Not nowhere close to racism, but on a scenario of countries like Namibia and South Africa and Botswana, we face a potential uncontrollable immigration threat specifically if we all agree to that AfCFTA protocol on free movement of people specifically.
Yeah.
Because the main aim is for the goods and the people to move.
Yeah.
Not just the goods.
Yeah.
So a lot of the other African countries have to come to play. Because I recently saw on one of my YouTube feeds one of these so-called African influencers who came here to Namibia made a video saying Namibia is Africa's most westernized country.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
what are you talking about?
But it's probably because of how clean Namibia is.
Yeah.
How organized we are. Small population, large spaces. That's the key things that this person was focusing on.
Yeah.
Another one was earlier today, another Indian influencer, who also highlighted specifically, this unique facade of Namibia, where she basically said that, you know, but it seems like Namibia is like this hidden gem in Africa. I recently saw and heard we're now getting like British, a lot of British tourists now. Mm. Because if you go to some of these retailers here close to Maroua Mall or the ones at Maroua Mall, now there's a whole bunch of tourists. Now we're just having tourists up and down Independence Avenue. And please, the asset forfeiture department, oh, and Silim Robo, man. Go and rob the people that work in Namibia. Stop robbing the tourists. You guys are making us look bad. And we're just basic Namibians. Not that I'm part of your cluster of
of your economic activity, but yeah.
Economic activity.
Yeah.
Very diplomatic.
No, I had to be, Hamut. Otherwise, we would have the police making phone calls here, live on air, about Dwight Vatmakte.
Yeah, now, where's Nigeria? The Afrexim Bank report found that Nigeria's new logistics initiative, such as a dedicated cargo corridor to East and Southern Africa, are reducing transportation cost for Nigerian intra-Africa trade. So are we going to decide here what are we going to use in terms of this intra-Africa trade? I mean, there's no harm in using multiple modes of transport.
Yeah.
But for large-scale commercial activities in terms of cargo transport, rail and shipping are mostly used the world over because they're affordable. And they also they carry large amount of freight in comparison to in comparison to flights. So Nigeria, of course, is doing its own thing. It just figured out, you know what? We'll just fly this stuff. And you have the Lobito Corridor Group, which is let's face it, it's not an African project.
Yeah,
it's not because you know yes, it's on African land. I'm looking at who is funding the whole thing.
Yeah, and it's a SADC specific project. Yes, it's on Africa. Yes, it's in SADC.
Yeah.
But it's a SADC project that SADC promoted, that SADC is championing. So, yeah. And it's super obvious. It's connecting extraction to a port.
Extraction to a port. And when you look at it, I think extraction is going to become very lucrative the more technology advances because of how much the technological development are reliant on the extractive industry. And this kicked off at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. And what's the first thing that we saw in the early days of the, that you basically see if you look at the history of the Industrial Revolution? Mines started basically popping up left, right, and center, drilling rigs and all, and all these things. And so you have to melt all kinds of rocks to turn them into all kinds of metals for all kinds of products.
Basically,
that's a very extractive industry, a reliant economy that we are looking at. So the pieces that must be in place for you to have an economy that is that is based on that. It makes sense that in the early days of the implementation of the FCFTA, one thing that you see is that a lot of countries on the African continent are sort of like scrambling on what to trade with each other. The biggest player there is the currency. So you are a Namibian business individual and you are asked by your government to participate in the FCFTA in terms of inter-Africa trade. And you see that you have buyers coming out of the EU that are buying your product at 3 times the price that your inter-Africa trade partners are able to buy the product at.
Yeah.
Not just that, they are buying it in a currency that is even much more stronger. Who are you going to sell? Who are you going to prioritize in terms of selling that product?
I mean, just recently I discovered that the Angolans hold South African rand alongside the euro, the US dollar, and now they will add the Chinese yuan as reserve currencies. Reserve currencies are currencies, Helmut, that you collect as a central bank if you need to make international payments as a country.
Yeah.
Let's say you have to import things. Now, Helmut is there. There's like 20 Helmuts now ordering with me from China.
Yeah.
Then it's instructions that your central bank has to send to the central bank of China, because these guys was now placing online orders.
So send the money. Money's moving.
Yeah, and then the products come through that way. So reserve currencies are now becoming a major thing. It'll only the AFCFTA will definitely benefit South Africa a lot more than many of the other currencies on the continent.
the rand will become just stronger.
Yeah, and I think we can. South Africa is ahead of the, you know, much of the processing, because that's where much of the initiatives are from. Because you're not just shipping everything raw.
I mean, Helmut, the South Africans are even making tires, even though that legacy tire factory outside of Port Elizabeth in the Eastern Province closed down at the start of this year.
Yeah,
they were making tires. That company was more than 50 years old. That factory. More than 50 years old making tires. So, tire production, things like tire production and other particular industrial activities in South Africa. I mean, if one little factory closes down, another one opens up.
Yeah, so 3 minutes into the 3 minutes to the hour of 7. So it's time to basically wrap it up and sign out. Which means, continental free trade area. That's something that we're going to be hearing a lot, obviously, because it's a long-term plan. If you look at the basically everything AU is either 2030, 2050, 2063. So these are initiatives that are set up in a way that they should be carried on by the next leadership.
Mm.
And we're talking about 10, 20 years basically into infinity. So the question now that comes from there is, are we investing enough in youth leaderships in terms of training? You know, you want to have protégés in place, so to make sure that the legacy you are building is not set on fire from, 5 minutes into someone untrained taking over executive office.
Yeah.
And that's where we have a little bit of a problem then on the African continent, because you have people that pre-ordered the Bible still in office. And now...
starting again?
You can't talk about 2063. 2063.
And you were there when Judas was sitting right next to Jesus.
Yeah. Actually, you were Judas' babysitter. And now... you watch the homeboy grow...
You watch the first political actions being taken in a religious format.
I mean, if Judas said, I'm pretty sure if Judas spoke Afrikaans, you'd have said to the Pharisees, Verkoop. The Lord and Savior. I'm not going to Tura anytime soon, am I?
Stay away from church women, Amut. They will not forget you.
I know. All right, so obviously that brings up to us to the end of Home Run for today. Until Monday, same time, same place, on your favorite radio station. From me, you'll have a good one.
And on my side, dear listeners, see me on Sunday again. Before that, adios, and stay tuned for the next program after the break.
Care that helps you care for others. That's the Basic Mental Health First Aid course, free for NHP members. You learn how to spot early signs of mental or emotional distress in friends, family, or colleagues, and how to guide them to the right support before small struggles become bigger problems. Learn more and register for free at nhp.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to